night, my love.
Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is freelance music writer and researcher Steve Bergsman. And we're talking about his latest book, Earth Angels, The Short Lives and Controversial Deaths of Three R&B Pioneers. Steve, it's a pleasure to talk to you.
How are you this morning, Mark?
I'm doing okay. I'm doing all right. This is a fascinating book to me. It's about a trio. It's a trio of biographies, essentially, of three transitional R&B artists: Jesse Belvin, Guitar Slim, and Johnny Ace. How did you find out about these people?
Well, I did this book on Screamin' Jay Hawkins a couple of years ago, and Screamin' Jay has really odd comment. He was interviewed by a reporter, and he said, "I used to get drunk at this hotel, and I was there with Jesse Belvin, Guitar Slim, and Johnny A, and we all got drunk and naked in the hallway, et cetera, et cetera." And I always found that interesting because Screamin' Jay had a propensity for not telling the truth. You just make up stories. And he could have said, I was lying around the hotel with Chuck Berry, Little Richard, and Elvis Presley. He could have used big names. But he chose these names, and I thought, well, he actually might be telling the truth here. He could have been with Jesse Belvin, Guitar Slim, and Johnny Ace. And I knew the story of Johnny Ace, but I wrote a book about him. But I knew who Jesse Belvin was, but Guitar Slim was new to me. So as I researched everybody, I realized they all died young, and there was a bit of controversy about all their deaths. Less so for Guitar Slim, but certainly for Jesse Belvin and Johnny Ace.
As you write about in the book, these three R&B artists, and all of them sounded like they were on their way to stardom. But they were at a weird time point, a transitional time point for R&B music. Can you talk about that? Because this is really at the time, early 50s, going into the 60s, where R&B is sort of transitioning some of it into rock and roll and other things.
Here, what I found interesting, I set out to do this book to focus on the controversies. And what I found interesting was that these artists sort of represented a culmination of movements that really began maybe in the 20s or 30s. Or in the 40s, and they were sort of the apotheosis of these movements going forward, and they all represented something different in German to rock and roll. And I'll just pull Johnny Ace out just as an example. In the 40s, during the war years, there was a movement. The success of just one song, actually, kind of a soft side of R&B. And then in the late 40s, going into the 50s, there were a number of African-American singers who sort of, they were in the minority, but they all had popular songs. They represented the sort of soft R&B. And then you get to Johnny Ace in 1952 with, was it My Song or Your Song? Actually, I can't remember now, which was a huge hit. Went to number one on the R&B charts. It was probably one of the top two R&B songs of the year. And so there was sort of a movement to kind of soft R&B, which eventually became soul music, part of soul music. So you had the danceable soul music in the 60s, and then you had the very soft soul music also in the 1960s. And that all kind of came through Johnny Ace. So there, you know, and they all represented this kind of evolution that was happening in American music. If you take Guitar Slim, so Guitar Slim came out of Alabama. Alabama or Mississippi, but I believe it was Alabama, but Mississippi, it's early morning here on the West Coast. Sorry, Mark. so there was, in the South, Southwest part of the South, Texas, for example, they played the guitar differently and harder than the blues musicians who came out of the Mississippi Delta area. Huh. And this sort of music became amplified in the late 1940s. And so we had the electric guitar kind of moving into R&B in the late 1940s. But the first electric guitars, you were tied to your amp. There was a very short cord between your amp and your guitar. And then Guitar Slim comes along, and he's a real showman. A number of these guitarists were showmen. You know, they played behind their back. They, you know, do all sorts of acrobatics, you might say, on the stage. So they weren't just musicians, they were showmen. And this is where Guitar Slim was. And he says, you know, I want a cord for my electric guitar that's 30 feet long. So he had a custom cord made, because not only would he march out into the audience with his electric guitar, sometimes he'd end the show by just walking out the back door with his electric. He'd be playing out the back door, onto the street, and down the road.
Oh, wow.
As far as the cord would go. So, and Guitar Slim was the kind of the, he transitioned that electric guitar into the Jimi Hendrix of the world.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you talk to Jimi Hendrix or any other famous guitar, some of them are still alive now, one or two, they say, oh, yeah, Guitar Slim. Yeah, he was important. B.B. King, Guitar Slim. So a lot of famous, we call the best guitarists of rock history, they owe a debt to a guy like Guitar Slim. So these guys all did this, were in a period of transition here.
The other thing this book is, and I found this fascinating, is a sort of a history of the recording industry at that time. And it sounded chaotic. And it also sounded like a lot of people were ripping people off.
Well, that's true. So
I think one of the quotes in your book is, if you had $100, you had a record label.
Yes. So it was easy to start a label, hard to make money out of it. There were a lot of things going on with the war years and the immediate post-war years that was affecting the recording industry. And one of the things that came out of all that was these independent record labels. And you're right, they were very small and they showed up. Sometimes they were in, you know, the recording studio was somebody's garage. But the important ones, the ones that focused on R&B, oddly enough, people think, oh, R&B, you know, New Orleans or Memphis, or if they get into, as far as the doo-wop years, New York. But most of them were the new independent labels that focused on R&B and that were successful. They were out of Los Angeles. And there was a reason for that, because in the migration of African Americans out of the South, we always think they all went north to Chicago or Detroit or Philadelphia or New York. But the Texas, sort of Oklahoma area, they went west. So you could say, okay, they were Okies. They went to, you know, help pull crops in the field. But no, a lot of them went west, and they went to the Los Angeles area. And they went there because there was a booming defense industry. It was World War II years in Los Angeles areas, and there were jobs for them. So they went west to get jobs, but they were non-agricultural jobs. So suddenly there was this big African-American population in a city like Los Angeles, and they, you know, they wanted to be entertained. They wanted to have clubs of their own. And a lot of musicians from Texas and South and Oklahoma, they ended up in the Los Angeles area. So there was a lot of talent there already. And a lot of jazz talent, a lot of rhythm and blues talent. And there was money in Los Angeles. And so some of these record labels, most of them actually, they were in Los Angeles, not in New York or Chicago. The South, until after World War II, that the South had their first big recording studios. The first one was in Nashville. By the end of the 1940s, there was one in New Orleans, and then Memphis had one at the start of the 50s. So there wasn't a lot of good recording studios in the South, and but you know, South had they also had a lot of talent in the South that need to be discovered. Some of them went to California to record. So yeah, so all those kind of things were going on in the world of R&B.
Talking about Jesse Belvin and specifically, but other artists too. A lot of them were ripped off because people. They wrote songs, and they gave away the copyright of the song or something. I mean, there are many times when stuff was released and their names are not even on the record.
So you were right. This was sort of the Wild West of the recording industry, and some of these producers and the new record companies were very legit and honest, but most of them weren't. And most of them exploited the talent that was there. And the problem was, you know, these very talented, very artistic black singers, they had, you know, they were writing songs, they were singing songs, but they were poor and they always needed money. So they would go to these record companies and say, look, I have a song here. The record company would say, you know, here's $20. I'll take your song. And once these record companies took their song, they owned that song. And they, you know, they didn't put Jesse Belvin's name on it. They put some fictitious name on it that represented them. So this went on forever. And Jesse Belvin, who was really the first star to come out of South Central LA, which was a hothouse of talent. And he was a guy, as talented as he was, he always needed money. He was poor. He always needed money. So he was always just selling his songs for, you know, $20. I mean, if he got $100 for a song, that was a lot of money back then. $100 is, I don't know, $1,000 in today's money. So that represented a lot of money to him. And then, you know, then the song companies put Harvey's name on it, and they got all the credit, and they got all the royalties as well.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is freelance music writer and researcher Steve Bergsman. And we're talking about his latest book, Earth Angels, The Short Lives and Controversial Deaths of Three R&B Pioneers. I think one of the saddest things, Steve, about this book is I had never heard of these three artists at all. And I found that hard to believe. Being a DJ and stuff like that. I mean, these people are virtually their music is just not although everybody knows their songs a lot of times. Jesse Belvin's a great example, Earth Angel and Good Night, My Love. I mean, people know their music, but they don't associate it with the artist.
Well, there's two reasons for that. First of all, they were stars before rock and roll.
Yeah.
And if you were, say, a jazz musician, Louis Armstrong or somebody like that, then you would be covered by the general press. But the general press didn't cover R&B. So if you were a black musician or a black singer before the advent of rock and roll, you didn't get any press. So people didn't know who you are. You know, Johnny Ace, from 52 to 54 before he died, I mean, he dominated the R&B charts. Every song that his company put to market was a big hit. And he was the teen idol of Black America. He was the James Dean of Black America. But, I mean, I couldn't even find a Johnny Ace interview. I'm sure there's one out there maybe, but
wow.
I couldn't find one.
Wow.
So nobody, they didn't care about these people. So that's why Jesse Belvin, Guitar Slim, and Johnny Ace, that's why they're unknown, because they were at that point where the general press didn't cover R&B.
Yeah.
The second part of that is they died young. If they were still alive as a rock and roll first appeared and began to mature, and then we go from the end of the rock and roll and Elvis Presley in 56 to the Beatles in 64. And the Beatles and all the British musicians of that time, they were big fans of R&B, early R&B.
Yeah.
So if you were still alive and you had sort of a second career and everyone knew who you were, because suddenly everybody wanted to know who these old R&B singers were, all of these old R&B guitarists were. And many of them became famous, and many of them are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But if you died before that, before the Beatles, they didn't know who you were. And that's why we know who these guys are today. And as I said, this is my life. I'm a musicologist. But when I started this book, I didn't know who Guitar Slim. I had never heard of the name.
Let's talk about Jesse Belvin as an example of one of the artists, because I don't want to give away all the information in your book. But
sure.
Let's feature Jesse Belvin. First of all, what a performer. I mean, you see these pictures of him. He was this incredible, handsome guy, had incredible stage presence. He was an amazing artist, and he wrote or co-wrote some of the most cherished songs of the early 1950s. Earth Angel, Goodnight, My Love is two examples. Originally, though, he was born in Texas, right?
Yeah, so oddly enough, and I didn't know this when I began the book, but in Los Angeles, in the hothouse of, say, South Central Los Angeles, where a good portion of the African-American population of Los Angeles lived, many of them came from Texas. So a lot of the stars of the R&B world, and then with the coming of the 1950s, many of the stars of the doo-wop world, either they came from Texas or their families had come from Texas and Oklahoma in the 40s. A lot of them came, as I mentioned, for a job. They came for jobs. Some of those families had been there since the 30s, but many of them came in the 1940s. So if you just pull up about anybody who became famous in doo-wop, you know, some of the plotters, or some of the Penguins who sang Earth Angel, the song Earth Angel. And you'll find they had Texas roots. And this is one of the big surprises for me. And Jesse Belvin was one of those. He was actually born in a small town in Texas. So he had Texas roots. And the thing about Jesse Belvin, he was older, and he was at the start of it all. He began his professional career in the late 1940s.
One of the things I love, there's a story, an anecdote in your book, I think it's from Jesse Jr., about how prolific a songwriter Jesse Belvin was. The story was he went out to get milk and came back, and he had written four songs, and later that day sold them all.
Yeah, and do we know what they were? Probably not, because he sold them, and the record company put a name on it, and that's the, you know, and then it's lost. It was a Jesse Belvin song. So, so he's a prolific songwriter and a great singer. So, and then he sort of nourished this whole generation of singers that came out of, you know, South Central LA, you know, part of the Platters or the Pans. There must have been 15 doo-wop groups that came out of South Central LA, Los Angeles, and they all followed Jesse Belvin's lead. He was the guy. You know, Etta James, she said, we all idolized Jesse Belvin. He was the guy.
Those stories of the fact that Etta James is idolizing Jesse Belvin was just amazing in this book. I love the idea of the young Etta James sort of swooning over Jesse Belvin.
But, you know, that was her neighborhood. So she could turn around, look left, and there's Janelle Hodge, who I interviewed extensively. He just died about a year or two ago, but he gets co-authorship with Jesse for Earth Angel. And there's actually now three official co-authors of Earth Angel, but it was a Jesse Belvin tune.
It's weird because the story of Earth Angel is really a long and twisted path. Jesse had written it, and then he went off and was in the war. And then
he
came back, and then people who were trying to finish it up couldn't finish it up, and he ended up finishing Earth Angel.
He came back. No, he came back, and Earth Angel was a hit already. So these people, including Gaynell and Chris William, I may have that wrong, they finished up the song. Nobody asked them to, but they sort of, again, it was a slippery slope. They had Jesse's Belvin's Earth Angel. He didn't give them the rights to record it or finish it, but it was such a good song that, you know, Jesse Belvin's been drafted. He's not in town. Let's take this song and record it ourselves. And that's pretty much what happened with Earth Angel. And then he had a pack and for the rights to Earth Angel. And then since everybody was ripping everybody else off, you know, the alleged co-songwriters, singers, the record companies, and there were a couple involved. Everybody was trying to steal this song. It was a convoluted mess before it all got put out by the court.
We're going to run out of time, but I want to say he's finally makes it big time. He's signed by RCA. He signs with RCA, and you think, wow, so he's going to really make it. The first song they make, they want to turn him into the Black Elvis. But the first thing that the project they put him on is to sing an English version of Volare. What the hell? What's that about?
Yeah, I have to laugh because, you know, could they have taken a worse song? I mean, it's not that Bulari is not a bad song.
But not for an R&B person.
No, yeah, and the big hit in the United States, it wasn't even in English, it was in Italian.
Right. Now, before we go, we're going to run out of... The big controversy about his death is, I think he was playing a gig in Arkansas, and he had a horrible car accident and died. And there's been rumors that it was white supremacists or Ku Klux Klan people that fiddled with his car.
Yes. So that was one of the controversies I looked into. And I'm gonna on the radio here, I'm not going to say how it turned out. But, that was one of the three controversies I investigated. So it was the first integrated concert in Little Rock, Arkansas. Stories that the concert may have been at some point broken up, or there was some threatening going on by white supremacists. Jesse Bell, after the concert, he's driving back to Texas, and at some point, it's head-on collision, and Jesse Belvin is killed in the crash. And then the press, especially not the white press, they could care less, but the black press sort of takes up this issue that maybe the Ku Klux Klan had played with his brakes. And so even though the accident occurred hours after the concert, it was due to the fact that, you know, they may have put a hole in the brake line or something, and that's why the crash occurred.
Steve, we're gonna have to end there because we're completely out of time. People are gonna need to read the book to figure out the research you did. My guest tonight has been freelance music writer and researcher Steve Bergsman, and we've been talking about his latest book. It's a fascinating sort of look at not only these three artists, but also the time. Earth Angels, The Short Lives and Controversial Deaths of Three R&B Pioneers. Steve, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.
Good night, my love. Pleasant dreams.